welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Hi, Lucy.
Hello. So, do you want, for anybody that doesn't know who you are, do you want to introduce yourself and let us know about your blogging journey?
Yes. My name is Julia. I'm Italian. I'm based in London since 11 years. And I work as a food and travel writer for my blog, which is called mondomulia.com. And I also work as a food photographer, as an Instagrammer, and yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, you've got a lot of strings to your bow. What came first, Instagram or the blog?
The blog, but only by maybe a week.
Okay. Or by so a few days. So basically the same time.
Yeah. But the idea, the initial idea was to have a blog. And 6 years ago when I opened my blog, not many food blogger even had Instagram, because at the time it was only available on iPhone. Mm-hmm. Not everyone had a smartphone even back then. And I remember going, after a few months after starting my blog, I remember going to events and meeting other food bloggers, even 1 or 2 years later, and I was one of the few who had an Instagram account. I even remember bloggers saying, I don't have time for an Instagram account.
Oh my God.
Who cares about pictures? I'm a writer or something like that.
Really? Yeah.
There were bloggers who were so focused on the writing, yeah, because they were either doing restaurant reviews, but like, almost like a food critic, mm-hmm, really well-written reviews, and or recipes. So there are these two sort of types of food blogs. And either way, they had that their strengths was the writing,
mm,
and their food knowledge. So it wasn't really about the pictures. And I think that was the winning element for me, because I started my blog because of my photography,
yeah,
because I always enjoyed taking photos, but I didn't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And I needed something to push me, just to have a reason to go out and photograph, mm, or set up a recipe at home and style it and photograph it. Even though, to be honest, back then I wasn't really even styling. It was just cooking something, putting it on a IKEA plate and taking a photo. But I had already like a good camera back then, because I was photographing with a DSLR.
Okay.
And because I had this equipment that most bloggers didn't have back then,
yeah,
I think it made my blog stood up from the beginning.
Yeah.
And then it went up from there. And then Instagram became what it is today, or maybe what it was before the algorithm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instagram became what it's not anymore.
Yeah.
So I started working as an Instagrammer as well.
Cool, that's exciting. And now you do some freelance stuff where you are just doing food styling and photography, don't you?
Yes, so I work full-time on my blog,
mm-hmm,
and on different projects with food and travel brands.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of these projects, I sometimes develop recipes, in that case I would do all my styling and the photography, and other times I take photos for a client, and it could be at an event or a restaurant, and other times I do travel photography, so I could be working with a tourist destination, a tourist board, or mm-hmm, a hotel brand, and taking photos as on assignment in a destination around the world. And because of the work I do as a freelance photographer, and the experience I've got taking pictures in my home and styling my own recipes in my home studio, I've also started in the last year to teach photography workshops, which I love. When I was younger, I've always wanted to be a teacher.
Really?
Yeah, until I realized that actually students are really annoying, and I just don't have the patience to like teach in a school every day.
Children are annoying,
but workshops every now and then, I can do that. for me, even the whole point of having a blog is to share my knowledge, mm-hmm. whether it's a good restaurant or a great recipes or a great hotel and tourist destination that I've been to. I want to share them, and that's why I have the blog. And if I can then share my skill on styling and food photography to other people and do that in person at a workshop, that's great. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. And you get also the direct feedback from people, which is something I miss from writing an online platform.
And funny enough, actually, we were just saying offline before we started recording how blogging can sometimes be a little bit thankless, but when someone comments or direct message you, even on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and says they like your work or they really appreciate something that you've shared, it's like the best feeling. It really is. Even though there's no monetary reward behind it, I feel like that's one of the reasons why we all do what we do, a big reason.
Yeah.
So I can understand why
it's a big reason beyond being paid, beyond the free stuff, the free food, the free travel, in my case. Getting a nice comment from someone you work with or from a brand or from a reader, it's what keeps you going, because you could use the number of followers and the number of views as a measure of your success, but it's not really something you can rely on, because in a blog, views could be all down to good SEO, and Instagram followers could all be down to, you know, someone featured you and then suddenly you get all these new followers, but it's not really a measure of your success or a measure of you doing a great job and touching people with your words or engaging people in your life.
Yeah, it's meaningless essentially, isn't it?
Basically,
it's an ego. It serves
it's
your
an ego.
Ego
boost.
Yeah, exactly. Which is fine. We all need a little ego boost now and again, but
I'm so fed up with all the being obsessed with looking at numbers. Mm. It's dangerous because you've just focused on that, and when actually it doesn't mean anything, especially on Instagram, where you can have hundred thousands of followers and get a few hundred likes, or you can have a few thousand followers and get a few thousand likes. It's just having a lot of followers doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It's not even about how many likes you get on a picture. It's about what maybe the comments. Like, do people just like your photo because it fits their aesthetic and they are not even consciously double tapping to like your photo, or are they actually stopping a few seconds to look at the photo before, you know, scrolling to the next on their Instagram feed? And truly engaging with your caption, with your photo, because otherwise it's just...
That's a really good distinction to make as well, because I have a really small following, but even from my small following, I manage to get, bless you, sometimes I manage to get really authentic. I hate overusing that word, authentic. You know what I mean? Like, people will actually respond to my caption with actual words, not like two emojis or good one.
Love it.
Yeah, keep it up. So that's a really important distinction to make. But at the same time, I found myself still quite obsessed with the likes. I find it quite hard to stop myself from being obsessed with the likes, but
it's really hard not to. But at the same time, I know, because I know what kind of content is going to get more likes, and I know that if I'm going to post a photo of a colourful pastel house in Notting Hill, it's going to get more likes than a flat lay that I've spent half an hour styling and a few hours cooking the dishes before that. And it's just, it is what it is. It's, as I said, I think Instagram has created very a few defined aesthetics, and now we all like them. You're not even consciously realize, but you see a pastel house, you like it. A vintage car parked outside a pretty house, and you just automatically give a like.
I remember you saying to me once, actually, like, your eye is trained to like certain people's pictures in your feed. And and after you said that, I noticed myself doing it. There would be a few people who I always just like.
Yeah, because I scroll my feed so quickly that I just double tap the picture. It's just, I'm not really engaging with the content. Just liking. And likewise, you know, other people would do that with my content, unless they stop for a few seconds to leave a comment, a real comment.
Yeah.
And that's when I know that my photo has meant something for them. But
or the caption. I suppose it's a combination of the two, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. And I've for me, the captions are really important. Mm. And sometimes I stare at a photo for half an hour trying to come up with a caption, and my husband, I'm like, Sandy, what should I write in this photo? and it's just like, just say what it is, just say the name of the dish or pink door. I'm like, that's boring. So I'm always trying to come up with something about myself, or sharing what I'm feeling at that moment. So it's nice when I do that. It's nice if someone actually acknowledges the fact that I poured my heart out into that caption. But I love it. There are some Instagrammers I follow who are really witty, and I've got an incredible sense of humor, and just crack me up with their captions. They are often unrelated to the photo. They have beautiful pictures, but then their caption is just so funny. And I think that's a big element of their success as Instagrammers. Is a lot of Instagrammers today overlook the caption element. They just focus on the pictures.
Yeah.
But especially if you want to work as an Instagrammer, I think it's important to develop the writing side, because brands also look at the right tone of voice and your storytelling and really what you say about you and about the world and about your life, that it's important for other people to connect to that, and brands look for that, I hope.
I hope they don't just look
at numbers.
Yeah. And I think it's changing as well now. Actually, I think only this week have you seen the update to Instagram. It's like
the
branded content thing.
I haven't seen it. We were talking about it with someone this morning, actually.
I think it looks pretty good.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll have to check it out.
Basically, it's just, I mean, I don't know when this episode will come out, but we'll probably all be using it willy-nilly. But
for sure. If anything that comes out, we have to get on it and learn it. It was the same with Instagram stories. I was so not ready to switch from Snapchat, but
gotta get one.
I had to, and I really enjoy it now, because I use it a bit differently than how I used Snapchat. I think the beauty of Snapchat was that I didn't have any followers there, and it was just so.
It just feels freeing.
Yeah, the freedom to just talk on camera with no makeup on at home, wearing whatever clothes and just talking about my day or something that happened to me.
Yeah.
And those 50, maybe 70 people that followed me on Snapchat would really engage with that.
Yeah.
And I love that. And also I love following on Snapchat people that I had been following on Instagram for many years, and on Instagram they always came across as some kind of person, maybe really like fashion-y and super styly person, and on Snapchat they would be like completely down to earth and really funny. And so I love that about Snapchat, but I had to, when Instagram stories came out, I tried to have both, and it was
too
impossible,
hard, yeah.
Too much work. So naturally I had to focus on Instagram stories, because brands also demanded, because I have so many more followers on Instagram, it just made more sense to focus my efforts on a platform where I have more views and more followers. And I do enjoy it. But
is that something you offer as well to brands as part of kind of the whole package?
I think brands now would ask it anyway, but I always offer it, especially when I go on a press trip. And I travel a lot, both by myself or with my husband, and on a press trip with other journalists and bloggers. And I always do Instagram stories, because it just gives so much more to the viewer than just an Instagram post. Because even when I'm on a trip, I would maybe post on Instagram once or twice at the most in one day. So over a trip of 3 days, I would post maybe 5 Instagram photos. And even though they definitely, the posts tell a lot about the destination, about my experience traveling there, on stories you get all the fun bits, all the in-betweens, the walking from one place to the other, the being on the bus, being on the train, or meeting someone locally, because I do a lot of food trips, so I meet food producers, and also I'm very strict with my Instagram. If I go somewhere in the evening, I know I wouldn't be able to take pictures. I only take photos in daylight. And if I go to a restaurant that is amazing, but it doesn't really fit my feed or like my Instagram aesthetic, I wouldn't be able to post a photo on my Instagram, which is a shame, because sometimes the place is great, the food is great, but it's just, I can't Instagram everything. And also sometimes the light, the colors are just not good enough to take a good picture. So Instagram gives me the opportunity to still feature these places and people. But
that's a good tip. If something doesn't fit your aesthetic or whatever, like I was at Notting Hill Carnival at the weekend, and I just knew, and even Wilderness, I just knew everything was too green. So none of this is going to fit my aesthetic. So I just shared it all on stories.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah, I struggle taking Instagrams at festivals, because even if I take a really good photo of like the landscape, the festival venue, the tents or whatever, it just doesn't go in my feed, because my feed is cityscape or flat lays
of
food, and you just can't get that in a festival. So yeah, I've been to Wilderness as well. I wasn't able
of
to really post anything.
Yeah, it was a bit too messy for that.
But I am very strict with my Instagram, and I try to post really only the best, the photos that I'm 100% convinced of. And I've got to the point where I go to an event or to a restaurant, whatever, and I take loads of photos, and then I need even a day or two to look at them and pick the one that fits my feed, and think in my mind when to post it as well. I never got around to use one of those like Planoly, apps that are great to schedule, well, to curate your Instagram
feed.
They're
amazing,
They are great apps, but I'm just, I don't know, it's like
you do it more instantly though, actually, don't you?
Yeah, I try, maybe maybe I have one day delay on post, but never more than that.
Wow.
I think because I'm so busy, if I had to post now over a 4-hour restaurant I went to last week. I wouldn't have time today, because today I've been to another restaurant. I need to go somewhere
else.
And in a few days I'll travel, so then I know I'll have that content from my trip, and then I'll travel somewhere else and have the content from the other trip. I can't have a backlog of Instagram posts, basically.
Yeah,
I already have a black backlog of
It's like having
posts.
A to-do list, another to-do list, really.
Yeah.
I find it super helpful for me because, it works for me. But so when you're doing it kind of on the hoof, as it were, do you literally just know your aesthetic so much that you just know if it's going to fit in, or...
Yes, I think even before I take the picture, I look around me for the perfect shot.
Yeah.
So, and it's a shame in a way that we are, and a lot of Instagrammers do it, we are so trained on the kind of photo we want, and we end up always taking the same style of photos rather than being creative and taking something completely different, you know, like breaking your
feed.
But we don't, because we know that if we do, we won't get any likes.
Yeah, it's hard. You have to have kind of a mix of the two, but it's difficult to have a mix of the two, because if you have that one picture where you've gone all out, you're like, that's
you
gonna
have
bug
to
me.
Do it slowly. Yeah. And you have to be constant. So my tip would be, if you're trying to change the niche of your Instagram feed, or change your content, do it slowly, introduce different kind of images. Because I had this issue when I started implementing more travel content into my Instagram feed, because at the beginning my Instagram was really instant. I would just post photos of food and coffee, because I'm obsessed with coffee. and I love discovering, trying new specialty coffee shops. So I would always take a photo of order a coffee and take a photo and post it within a few minutes. I mean, I always edit my photos, but pretty much instantly I would post it on Instagram. And then when I started traveling more and more, after I started doing this as a freelancer, I had to implement that travel content. And at the beginning, my travel photos didn't get the same engagement, because everyone wanted photos of donuts and photos of
coffee. Yeah.
And I remember joking that, like, after a few days of posting travel photos, I was like, I need to go and look a donut, look for a donut, or look for a cortado, or like some latte art to put in my feed. I need a coffee photo. And now is almost the opposite. My city photos get more likes than my flat lays, but I try to keep a good balance. So, like, I would have a flat lay and then maybe a city photo and then maybe a coffee photo and then maybe a flat lay again and start with that cycle, so that when I look at my grid, it's all balanced color-wise and composition-wise. But it's definitely doable to switch from one sort of niche. If you only do fashion, implement a bit of food or a bit of travel, or, you know.
I feel like the travel side is one that almost, what bloggers, when they get bigger, often end up incorporating travel, because that's one of the things that, whatever niche you do, everyone can travel, and normally you end...
Yeah, but if you have a really, like, if you have a feed that it's only, and it's the same for a blog, so we're talking really about Instagram, but it would be the same if you have a blog, and if you've, let's say you have a platform that it's really just about fashion and you want to start doing travel guides, I'm not sure your audience will immediately connect to it unless you put a lot of photos of you wearing different outfits in front of the Colosseum in Rome, and then you wrote about your trip to Rome, but you still have to link it to the maybe the personal style content or the fashion content. And that's a way to then introduce the travel into a fashion blog, for example. And then maybe over time, over months, you can get away, if you do want to get away from the fashion, for example, niche, and just focus on the travel, then you can slowly work more on the travel and incorporate less of the outfits, for example.
That's a really good practical tip as well for kind of it's like a transition more than like a complete switch up of your niche.
Yeah, and also it's about creating different audiences because I'm convinced that even on my blog I have different audiences. I've got people that only come for the recipes, and other people only come for the travel guides, and others only come for the restaurant reviews because obviously if the restaurant reviews if there are restaurants in London, my readers from abroad might not be as interested in reading them, but they might be more interested in my recipes or in my travel guide.
Yeah.
So I think even if you start a blog, even if you start blogging in a very specific niche, you can always expand. If you are successful in that niche and you love writing about that topic, then it's great because you can have a really engaged audience and you could be the best source of comment on that particular topic, which
be
is
the expert, right?
Yeah, which is great if you have a niche you're passionate about. But likewise, if you want to write about different things, like in my case, I really love making recipes and I love sharing recipes, but I also love writing restaurant reviews and I love traveling and writing about destinations. So you can do all of it, and it's just about introducing your content slowly so that you grow different audiences within your main blog audience.
And your audience kind of grows with you a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I found that in the past 6 months maybe. Oh, bless you. Probably since I've been working harder on my Instagram, actually it's kind of gone hand in hand with my blog. And people have dropped off and I've lost traffic, but I've grown email subscribers because I think I'm almost niching in a little bit more on the audience that I want, which is something that Monica Stott talks about in episode 3 of the podcast, but also in her blogger course and on her blog as well. Your niche can be your audience, and it can be lots of audiences, really, or lots of kind of subsections, really. So one thing I wanted to ask you about was food styling, specifically, or photo styling, really, which you're doing a lot more teaching, like workshops and stuff. So one of the, this is a bit of a backwards way of asking you about creating for good, basically, because, so for people that don't know what creating for good is, anybody who's heavily into Instagram will definitely know, but people that don't, could you explain a little bit about it, please?
Yes. Creating for Good is a community of Instagrammers. I think we're all based in London, at least the core members of Creating for Good. And it's basically a group of people who get together to organize events, to fundraise money for charities. And that's the bottom line. And we all happen to also be Instagrammers. We actually all met through Instagram. And it was a friend of mine, Jo Yee at Candids by Jo, who got us together. She sent an email around saying, I've got an idea. I want to do something to raise money and give back to charities. Are you interested in doing something together? And we all responded yes, and we got together, and within a day we decided to start Creating for Good, and within a month we had our first event, and within 3 months, crazily, we had our first full day conference, which was hard to organize, but it was a great success.
Amazing. It was obviously like heavily publicized on Instagram. But
yeah.
Candids by Jo and her Cinemagraphs.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so Jo does she became obsessed with Cinemagraphs, which are like they're videos where only one one element of the video is moving, yeah. everything else is still. And she's amazing because she's such a great stylist. She sets up the most beautiful, moody scenes. And anyway, she started sharing more and more cinemagraphs, and she started the hashtag cinemagraph Sundays, where she shares one every week. And so she did teach a workshop at our full day conference on cinemagraphs, and I was teaching a food photography mm-hmm. and styling workshop together with Sharka at Sharka Babica. And then we had other Instagrammers that are part of Creating for Good were there to either teach workshops or talk at a panel discussion, moderate discussion, organize the event, to run photo walks. And basically the idea was to have a full day gathering in London, and everything for the event was donated. Mm. So we all donated our skills, our time teaching the workshops. Dani of the Social Kitchen donated the food, and she prepared the most delicious breakfast and lunch. We had other brands donating wine and cheese and snacks and food and coffee and tea. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, but basically we organized this great event, and we raised I think with the workshop we raised 5,000-6,000 pounds. But all together with Creating for Good, we've now raised over £11,000.
Wow.
And we only started at the end of January. We only organized two events, really, and then at We Love to Brunch, they've done charity brunches as well. But what I love about Creating for Good, aside from the fact that we are using our skills to do something good,
mm-hmm.
it's not just a almost meaningless sharing sharing of a nice flat lay on Instagram. It's doing something good with that. Mm-hmm. It's sharing, maybe my skill is taking a photo, styling a flat lay and taking a photo of it, but if I can share that skill with other people who want to learn that skill, and them instead of paying me, they donate that money to charity,
yeah.
and 100% of the money goes to charity. We don't get anything.
Yeah.
We are 100% volunteer at Creating for Good. So for me it's the best feeling, because I literally done something good, and it just makes me feel. I remember the day after the conference, we were all on cloud nine. Is that
Yeah.
it was the best feeling. So we've now working on our next event because we had such a great feedback about the panel discussion that we had as part of the conference. Mm-hmm. We decided to organize another event that is just a panel discussion.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a lot cheaper to attend.
I don't know if I'll be able to edit out Anais just farting throughout this. Cheeky monkey.
Okay, I'm going to start again. We decided our next event is a panel discussion, and it will take place in London on Tuesday the 19th of September
mm-hmm.
in the evening. And we decided to have a panel discussion because we received great feedback about the panel discussion that we did in our conference. And also we chose a topic that is really close to our heart. We always talk about this topic whenever we meet for the Creating for Good meetings, and it's how to stay authentic and also grow your audience at the same time. And it basically it's a nice title to talk about Instagram bots and Instagram all those apps that you can use to follow people on your behalf.
All the automated likes and comments. Steffi hates them.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone hates them, but I love it when she talks about them on her story.
Yeah, Steffi Daydreamer. She hates. But I agree with her.
Yeah.
I also don't like Instagram pods.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like comment pods either.
No, there's just something...
I'm not part of any anymore, but I used to be part of two.
I've never been part of it. I just don't like the idea of basically having someone who is kind of forced to leave a comment.
Yeah.
Because they want you to give a comment back to them.
Yeah.
I think it's
obviously, you know, whatever, each their own, but I think when it's horrible to be in one as well is when you end up with, because you don't have any control over the pod unless you're the one who starts it and you're like full kind of pod control of who joins it. But if someone joins who then posts stuff that you don't like, you can't really bow out of just that one person.
Exactly.
Which is,
I would hate having to like,
I think that's when
that
it becomes
like
quite difficult, and then it becomes, yeah, it doesn't feel right. And
I understand that the whole algorithm change and drop in engagement, it was disheartening and I've been through it, but I wouldn't want to, you know, ask my friends to like my friends. I understand where it's coming from, and the fact that it's not that your friends don't want to like your photos, it's just they don't see it. So this is a way to get your content seen by people who, you know, they will probably like it.
Yeah.
Because I have so many friends that are real friends in real life, and they say they never see my Instagram post because Instagram doesn't show them in their feeds. And obviously when they do go on my feed, then they'll just like a bunch of photos all at once because they do like my content.
Yeah.
It's just they don't get in their feed, so it would make sense for me to send them a reminder every day. Hey,
it feels a bit.
You are my friend. Maybe you would want to like my photo today, but really, you, who does that? So well, I don't know. It's I don't, you know, it does come into the topic of being authentic, but I think more than just Instagram bots. I think the idea is, Are we authentic in the way we portray ourselves on social media? Because, for example, when it comes to food bloggers, you have all these bloggers and Instagrammers who take loads of photos of junk food or like really like filthy food, like burgers and ice creams and donuts, and every day it's just those kind of photos. Do they really eat that food?
Have you seen that account? Bitch Please, did you... It's something like, Bitch Please, did she eat that? And it's stuff like that, you know, like a...
Well, I need to check it out.
I'll find it and I'll send it to you.
It was the same
really
when Socality Barbie came out a few years ago. Do you remember that? And he was, like, taking the piece about Instagrammers who did, like, perfect flat lays and breakfast in bed with, you know, the perfectly laid out breakfast. And we are all a little bit victims to that. We all do
it a little bit,
but
I definitely do.
It's taking it to the extreme of ordering food that you don't want to eat just for the sake of an Instagram. That drives me mad. But or when you take a photo for a brand, so it's an Instagram with branded content with a product in it. The captions, like, it's so hard to get a caption that it's really your tone of voice, because you have to then send it to the client, to the PR, to the client, they'll read it, they'll want to change something, and eventually it ends up being something that you would have never written. The photo itself, maybe not exactly what you would have taken, but you had to, because your client brief gave you directions on how to take the picture. So when do you stop being authentic? When do you start being just an advertiser, really?
It's hard, isn't it? Because it's when it's your job.
Exactly.
Like when you go to an office, if you're an accountant, you don't go in the clothes that you wore at the weekend or stinking of alcohol because you're hungover. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard though, isn't it? Because where do you draw the line?
Because you want to have the content that it's really about yourself and your experience, but also more curated content that you've created for a brand. And it has to be fit their brand identity, but also fit into your brand identity. There's a blog post that Sarah Tasker at Me and Orla wrote recently about, yes, I think 10 tips on how to
write sponsored content that doesn't, yeah, feel gross. It's brilliant,
that,
isn't
every
it?
Every single, yeah. If you work with brands, just go and read that, yeah, post by Sarah Tasker, because every single tip she gives, it's so spot on.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And she, even that post made me realize things that I had not thought about it. And I've worked with brands for many years now, but it just made me, something switched, mm-hmm, in my mind when I was reading that post, and I'm more aware of some things. Like, for example, our job as influencers is not to sell a product, it's, mm-hmm, to make your audience aware of that product, so the fact that that product exists,
mm,
and that I like it, and then they might like it as well. But I'm not a salesperson. I'm not driving sales.
Yeah.
There are other marketing tools to actually increase sales of a product. So I think if you keep that in mind, it will change the way you create content and write captions, because our job is not to write a caption or a call to action that will make people go out and buy that item.
That's a really, really good distinction as well, because one of the points that I found was a light bulb for me, because it felt freeing, because I suddenly felt,
yeah,
like, oh, I don't have that responsibility to sell this product,
yeah,
on your behalf. You've simply paid me or given me the free product because you want access to my audience, and that is it.
Exactly.
That's where the transaction ends.
Exactly. I think captions shouldn't have a call to action to buy a product or to book a holiday. They should just be inspirational. They should,
yeah,
make your audience aware of that product,
yeah,
aware of the fact that I love the product and I'm happy to endorse it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to talk about all of this at Creating for Good panel discussion next month. So I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this podcast will find this topic very interesting.
How do people buy tickets?
So to book a spot to come,
mm-hmm,
to our event, you can go to our website, creatingforgood.co.uk. There's a page within the website called CFG Panel Discussions,
mm-hmm,
and on that page you can find the event flyers, the description of the events, and all the panelists that will be speaking at the event, and also link to book your ticket. You can also find the link directly on my Instagram bio, my Instagram profile. But we don't get any money. So instead of paying us to reserve the ticket,
mm-hmm,
we ask people to make a donation of £20 to Just Bread London,
right,
which is the charity that we've chosen to support with this event. So all you need to do is make the donation to on the Just Giving page of Just Bread and send us a receipt.
Ah, that's a good way of doing it. Oh, sorry, might have to stop for a moment. Oh, you're a little monkey, aren't you? She's been awake for at least half an hour, so she must go back,
yeah,
to bed now.
Yeah, definitely half an hour.
It's quite hot in here, but I don't want to open it just in case, because the noise will be too much. A little pickle. Maybe a little pickle. I'm just going to change her nappy.
Yeah.
her down, and then hopefully she will happily play over here for a bit. And then I'll ask you.
So we were just talking about how to book the ticket.
Yeah. I'll link to everything in the show notes, like all the handles and websites and everything we've talked about.
Yeah.
What section were we on? Were you in the middle of a sentence? When
I was just finishing about making the donation to Just Giving and things like that.
Okay, perfect.
Trying to think, do you want me to give more like food styling tips, something more practical about photography?
Yes, I've got two more questions that I wanted to ask you on that.
Or
and
how
then
to work with brands, how to
get
to travel. I don't know.
Yeah, I've got two more questions, both kind of practically tips. So going back to how I originally started this question, which was about food, photography and styling. So when we meet for coffee, I always try and steal tips. And a tip that you gave me when we were at that... Do you remember the place that had no natural light, but actually it did have natural light? We just didn't see it.
We didn't know. It had lights coming from the side, but also had annoying yellow spotlights on the ceiling, right on top of the table.
They were low as well, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They would like hit your head when you stand up low.
It would have been fine if they had switched off the spotlights.
Yeah.
Because there was plenty of daylight coming anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
I hate spotlights.
Yeah.
Especially when they're yellow and they just reflect on the table.
They were really warm, weren't they? Really, like almost orange.
But that's an easy tip, easy thing to look out when you're taking photos of in a restaurant of your food, of your dish, because not many people notice it, that there is actually a spotlight on top of your head, and that spotlight is reflecting on the table, and sometimes it will just create like a orangey glow over the dish, over the food. If it's a food that has like a surface that reflects, maybe like a gravy or something, or even just a spoon, it will reflect that spotlight, and it will look weird in the picture. So one thing I do, it's hard to do by yourself, but if you have a friend or an Instagram husband, you can ask for help, is to hold a paper menu literally on top of your head underneath the spotlight,
and that's it
you've blocked, bearing like obviously assuming that you are taking a photo during the day and you're not too far from a window, then you should have enough natural light to take that picture without any artificial light.
And you don't take pictures at all at night, do you? You don't use...
For my blog, yes, but I would only take photos with my DSLR camera for my blog.
Right.
And for my Instagram, I only take photos with my iPhone.
Right, okay.
I never mix the two. It's something I realized years ago.
Oh my God. You keep talking.
I'm gonna start again. For my blog, I always take photos with my DSLR camera, and for my Instagram, I always take photo with my iPhone. And it's something I've been doing since the beginning. And when I tried at one point to implement my DSLR photos into my Instagram, it just didn't work. Because it didn't fit in my profile, in my feed. Because my style of photography, it's very defined in both ways, for the Instagram and for the blog. So on the blog, I take a lot of photos shot at a... wait, let me start again.
She's distracting.
It's hard to start again. Ask me something. So basically with my camera, I take photos that have a low low f-stop, so I always photograph at f1.4 or f1.8, so you get that shallow depth of field,
right, okay,
where the background is really blurred and the object in focus, it's like there's one tiny object in focus, usually the dish or the cup of coffee or whatever, and the rest is blurred, and I really like that, and it works really well for pictures taken in the evening, because you have all the lights, maybe like the street lights, or even if you are in a restaurant, the bottles behind the bar create those blurred dots.
Yeah,
and I like that effect, and it works great on a blog, especially if you're looking at the picture quite sort of enlarged.
Yeah,
but it doesn't. It wouldn't work on my feed. So if you have an Instagram feed that is just that kind of picture, it's great. But to mix and match photos taken with the phone that have a wide-angle lens and where every element is in focus, to then take a close-up of a food where the background is sort of blurred, it just doesn't. Your audience wouldn't engage.
It's quite
with that
style,
because it's
the
styles are too different, so
I didn't even really think about that, but
because I only take photos for my Instagram with the phone, I just can't take photos in the evening or at night or in a restaurant that is too dark. It just the phone is not able to take that.
So what do you do if, for example, because some of the people probably listening to the podcast might have their first hotel review or restaurant review, what are your top tips, especially with restaurants, before you go there? Do you scope it out? Do you ask for a table with natural light?
Yes. So I would, first of all, when I get invited to a restaurant, I would look it up online and get an idea of the space, whether it has, first of all, whether if it's the kind of restaurant I would want to go and eat and pay for my food. Sometimes restaurants are really, they might be, they're just not my style.
Yeah.
Maybe they're too elegant, or they're not
too stuffy, or
or just I don't like the furniture.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
But that's important, isn't it? Because if you're going to have to take pictures.
Yeah, but also because I wouldn't go back there as a paying customer if it's not an atmosphere that makes me feel comfortable.
So I
look it up first and I decide whether or not I want to try that particular restaurant. And obviously, I always look at reviews and I read the menu. That the first thing would be to make sure that I love the food, but I also check out the space. And then when I'm there, I would always book to go either for breakfast or lunch, or if it's dinner, it would have to be like in summer, early evening, not in winter for sure, and always ask for a table by the window. And then the other thing I do as soon as I step into the restaurant, I look around at the table. So sometimes it happened on Sunday, actually. I do this thing, which is a brunch meetup with a few Instagrammer friends, and it's called the IG Brunch Club, and we meet once a month and we just have brunch together and chat, which is fun. So I did one on Sunday, and as soon as I step into the restaurant, I saw that they had reserved for us a beautiful table by the window. And it was the best spot in the restaurant, but it was a wooden table, and next to it there was a marble table that was more inside the room, further away from the window, but it was a much nicer surface. So I asked my friends who also have Instagram accounts, I was like, do you want the marble? They were like, yes. So we moved to the marble, and even though it was a bit dark, there was less natural light, but it still worked out better than the wooden table. So I always look at the surface, and sometimes if I did last week as well at another restaurant, me and my friend Sharka ended up taking photos of our breakfast on the floor because the table just wouldn't work. We switched to different tables, we went to the back of the restaurant, we went at the front, it just wasn't working, and like half an hour later we were with our eggs Benedict on the floor, because they have this the most of the floor was wood, But then they had a little bit of the floor just as you entered the restaurant that was concrete. It wasn't really paved and it was great. So it was near the window, but also I like, had that industrial feel.
So funny.
The waiters were a bit confused by all of that. It took us half an hour to eat our eggs, which were obviously very cold by then. But.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So try, my tip would be to sort of have a look around the space and choose the have a think of how you want your photo to be styled before the food comes, so that you can minimize the delay when the food is there. So literally just I start moving around things in the table before the food has even arrived, so that when the food arrives I don't have to spend too much time moving items around. I just need to put the dish and take the photo. Especially if you're going to a restaurant with friends, you don't want everyone to have to wait for you to be able to eat.
This will be fun to edit.
Hi.
Now you're silent.
Hi.
No one is talking now.
The other question that I wanted to ask you was about working with brands, because you work with some amazing brands, like Nespresso and... Those are people. You went
I can't
to,
even remember. Myself.
I know. I'm suddenly like.
I work with a lot of Italian brands because I'm Italian, and when it comes to food, I try to support Italian brands.
Uh-huh.
It obviously is a natural fit because a lot of the food I cook at home is Italian or Italian inspired. The recipes from my mother and my grandmother. So. If I get approached by an Italian brand, whether it is, I don't know, Grana Padano cheese or San Pellegrino water or Peroni beer or...
Ah, Peroni, yes.
Loads. I've worked with a lot of brands, food brands over the years, but I particularly try to support Italian products, especially when they are... is it PDO? When a product is like a registered mark,
like the trademark.
Yeah, like Grana Padano, you can only call it Grana Padano if it's cheese made by the consortium. It's like a consortium.
I think it's PDO or DPO.
I always get confused between the Italian.
PDO.
Okay, because I think it's PDO in Italian, DPO in English.
That makes sense.
But it's like a protected orangey. Yeah,
yes,
product.
Okay,
of
so that makes sense because.
Protected origin, I think.
I'm thinking of the Pizza Express menu. And they have
maybe the mozzarella.
It's DOP.
Yeah, DOP. DOP.
Yeah.
Oh, we got there.
Yes.
So.
I'm just thinking of one of the pizzas, and it says DOP, and I was always like, "What does DOP mean?"
Yeah, yeah. And you have that. You have that for certain types of cheese and wine, and even balsamic vinegar from Modena. I think.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all these products that have a very specific origin, whether it's a city. Like obviously Grana Padano comes from cows that are from a certain area of Italy, and you can only call maybe buffalo mozzarella if it comes from certain buffaloes in Campania or something like
that. Makes sense.
So by supporting those products, you're supporting the region and really the region that produces them. So I'm always happy to do that when it comes to Italy because it's my country, so I want to promote the good things of my country.
Yeah. But how did that all start? And she's learnt this week. This is her new beautiful sound that she makes. It sounds so good, but I wish we could put you in another room. I'm just gonna wait and see if she stops. She's tired again. You are such a little monkey. Can I give her to you? And if you sit with her facing me, she might
get distracted because she's looking at you.
Yeah. And also, she won't get cross because she won't be able to smell my milk. Thank you. Hi. Hello.
That's right.
She's smiling like mad. Brilliant. Okay, so perfect. So, I wanted to ask you about working with brands. So how did it all start? Like, did they approach you? Did you get to a certain number and start pitching people?
I've never pitched anyone. The only time I pitch someone, it's when I'm going somewhere on a trip.
Yeah.
And I want to stay in a certain hotel because I want to work with that brand, or because I worked with them before and I know it's the right hotel for me. And that's when I reach out to people. But otherwise, luckily I'm always been so busy that I never had time to pitch for more work, even though it's not really an excuse, because even if you're busy with work, you should always be looking for better work or better work that is a better fit for you. But mostly I do interact with brands on Twitter and Instagram, but mainly Twitter. I find, for me, it's always been a better platform to have conversations, whether it's with other bloggers or with other people who love food or love travel or with brands. So I think it's much easier if you to follow brands on Twitter and interact with the content that they share. And if you are able to start a conversation with them, then you can take it to a private message and say, hey, do you have an email I can reach you out to? I've got something I'd like to talk to you about.
Yeah.
And if it's a brand like, I don't know, Grana Padano or Peroni Beer, then you can establish the relationship on Twitter and then continue it over email afterwards. The thing is, a lot of these brands would have a PR agency that manages their campaigns. Yeah. So engaging with the brand itself and with the social media manager for that brand, it might not be enough to then be asked to work on a campaign, because the PR agency might be... It might just be that the PR agency doesn't manage their social media. So the PR agency doesn't know you.
Yeah.
And you're not in their database. So it's always worth really trying to meet as many PRs as possible and create the relationship with PR agencies but in your field. So
have you got something to say?
So I try to reach out to PR agencies in food and travel and build that relationship, because then when they do have a campaign that they think it's a good fit, they will ask me to be a part of it.
That's a really good tip, to use Twitter. I love Twitter personally, but I know some people, like, they just don't get on with it. But it's actually just a really powerful way.
It doesn't work until you have the right audience. It's I've always said that you need to create your community. You need to follow the people who will tweet about the things you're interested in.
Yeah, that's true.
And then it becomes fun. A lot of fun.
I love it. It's great. And you can mute people.
I love that you can mute people.
It's brilliant.
I wish I could mute people on Instagram.
I know. Well, I think who is... This is on Twitter. Freya Dowson had tweeted about wanting to... Like, the etiquette of unfollowing people on Instagram who you're just sick of or whatever. And I was like, it's such a shame, because you can mute people, obviously, on stories. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. Basically, I'm lucky, I think, now that my eye has stopped automatically liking the pictures, because they're just my friends, and then I don't see their pictures anymore.
I've
the benefit of the algorithm.
I'm quite ruthless when it comes to unfollowing people. I think last year, a few months ago, I went on a unfollowing spree on Twitter, and I went down from, I don't know, 5,000 following to 600.
Wow.
It was just, it was a lot of accounts that were not tweeting anymore, and or a lot of restaurants, and I don't know, a lot of even like online magazines and agencies that were not sharing the kind of content I'm interested in. And if I'm going to use that tool effectively, I need to be following people that tweet about things I want to know about.
Yeah,
otherwise, they're not benefiting from me following them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'm
it's
not benefiting from
street,
following
yeah.
them. So, I think definitely create a network of PR agencies, and not just try to meet them in person.
Mm.
It just makes such a big difference when you've meet a PR in person and you introduce yourself, because I've worked with PRs. Like, I had worked with them. They sent me on a press trip, or they, you know, we did a campaign together, and then I met them in person and we got to chat about my blog, and then I realized that they basically didn't know anything about my blog.
Mm.
I had not, like, to the point that maybe they didn't even know I'm Italian and I do recipes, like things that are quite obvious from spending 5 minutes on my blog. And it just made me realize that it's a shame, because maybe they had campaigns they would have had that would have been a good fit for me, but they just didn't even realize. And it's not necessarily their fault. They don't have the time to research all the blogs that are out there. So,
but you're right, it does make a difference when you meet somebody in person. And something that Jen said in the first episode of this podcast was about the fact that, especially with press trips, the PR that's organising the press trip and who's going to be on the press trip is not going to want to go on it with someone who they actively dislike.
Oh, but absolutely.
So meet up with the PR and be nice in an authentic way. Don't suck up to them. But
yeah, also because they would probably understand that you're just faking it.
That's a good point, actually.
You need to...
Yesterday.
Yeah, and I think it's important to establish a connection. And if you are going on a press trip with a PR, the PR is, you sometimes is the only element of the press trip that you know.
Mm,
because you might not know all the other guests, all the other journalists and bloggers. So at least if you know the PR is someone you respect and get along with, you know the trip is not going to be bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's gonna, you have at least an element, someone you can rely on.
That's a really good point.
I don't like when press trips don't have a PR.
No.
It's quite stressful
if something goes
wrong.
I think
it's short-sighted, because I think the client is trying to save money by having one less person to pay the flights and hotels and everything for, but so many things can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the risk of leaving bloggers and journalists by themselves without someone to take them around and take care of things.
Absolutely.
I mean, the risk is huge. You could, like, basically, you could miss your whole investment.
Yeah, completely. Just because you're trying to be...
To save.
Save money on one ticket.
Which, in the great scheme of things,
is
nothing.
You could ruin five pieces of content.
Exactly.
Whatever.
I've been on trips where... I was either completely by myself or with other bloggers, but again, like, no PR. And sometimes you get to restaurants that are not expecting you, or something goes wrong, like you miss a train, or some place that should be open is closed. Like, anything can happen, and you need to have a PR there to manage the situation. I think going back to your question, the way to get work is to start creating the content that you want to create for free. Like, you just do, if you want to do recipes, start doing those recipes for yourself and do the best possible quality of content that you can. And then when you have a body of work that you're proud of, then you can reach out to brands and say, this is put together a great media kit and reach out to brands and say, this is what I've done, this is my experience, I have an engaged audience on Instagram, on my blog, this is the kind of work that I do, and I think it would be a good fit with your brand, and then go from there. Because also I think a lot of agencies, PRs that work on campaigns, they will appreciate having being introduced to new people. They I'm sure on their side they're always looking for people to invite to their events or people to ask to work on some content.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll help, like, if you can help people do their job.
Exactly.
You're gonna get ahead.
Absolutely. So it's all about how you present yourself. Obviously, it's not easy to write a pitch and not come across and sort of showing off yourself, or
it feels awkward,
but not undermining yourself either. It's not easy. Sometimes I've had an experience a few months ago where I was looking for a hotel in a destination, and I sent a few emails to hotels that I really wanted to stay at, and I would say one, send one, and then wait for a response, and then get nothing for days, and then send another one, and so on, and it just got really depressing, because either I wasn't getting any response, or I was getting responses of like, are we already working with influencers that fit our audience? Like being a bit
sniffy about
it. Yeah, and they made me feel like I was asking for free stuff, which unless I was, but
in trade for something that would be valuable. But
it's because it was a brand that I wanted to work with, and I really wanted to go there and create the content to share on my audience, because I thought if I love that brand, that hotel, I want my audience, I'm sure my audience will engage with that. So it wasn't, it wasn't just about like asking someone for free stuff. It was about, hey, do you want to work together? I think I create good content and you might be interested. Sometimes you don't get a response, or you get a response that make you feel like, you're asking for free stuff.
You have to just push it off though, don't you? And just move on to the next person. Because, I hate that feeling when you feel like you're just a blagger.
Yeah. But it's part of our job. And there are so many people who are in this industry just for the free stuff and not really for a passion or for the passion of creating good content. So I understand that people on the other side who get asked every day to give something for free, they are fed up.
And if they've had bad experiences in the past,
I read the news a few weeks ago of a baker, I think in Manchester or Liverpool, who's basically, she gets asked to do free cakes and free cakes to celebrities and bloggers and influencers, and she wrote a whole rant on Twitter on her blog because she's obviously fed up to being asked for free stuff, and it's not fair.
Especially that if she's asked for free stuff.
Things like, do you want? We need a birthday cake for, I don't know, for the whole crew of a TV show. Mm. And she's like, well, okay, that's the price, like a cake for 40 people. Mm. Oh no, but we thought you would do it for free as for the exposure. We'll post it on Twitter or something. And like, no, it's my job. When I get asked to do Instagram posts for free, Instagram free
exposure on this,
even blog posts, like review products, feature products, I get asked all the time on a daily basis, and it's not fair to ask people for free stuff to work for free.
Yeah,
and I'm very strict about not working for free. But I also think that if you are a small independent producer, if you are a startup, if you are like a small business just starting out, then it's fair to ask people that you admire to support your work, and I'm happy to support businesses that I like, mm. and I'm happy to do that for free. So I don't know if it's a small producer that wants to send me something to try, and I won't guarantee that I'll post it. They are taking the risk to send me something I yeah. might not like it. But if I like it, then I'm happy to support them, maybe on Instagram stories or even Instagram or Twitter or mention
well.
On my blog. But there's no expectations
exactly,
that I'm going to
yeah.
do something. Whereas if I get an email from a big brand saying, we're going to send you a bottle of this or a bag of crisps.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even like crisps. I always say no to crisps. But
they say yes,
and then
they
said we want, or even like we invite you to this event, and we are expecting two
yeah.
Instagram posts and this and that. I'm like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you really like my content and want me to create Instagram content for you, then we need to work together. You need to give me a brief, and I need to take the time to develop the content, and I'm sorry, but you need to pay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
and I think
I can't do that for free.
Whatever your line is, everybody has a different line that they draw, but whatever it is, then draw it and be consistent with it, because yeah, it's about value and about respect, isn't it? What you consider to be of value to you, and also about respect. And like you say, if someone, a small company, wants to take the risk and send you products that you might never speak about, or you might even might have to wrap it up. I don't know what's wrong with you, Poppet. I'll sit you up. Will you be a little bit quiet while I ask Julia one more thing? I just need to ask you where everyone can find you online. I know, life is very, very hard. What if I lie you down? Is that a bit better? Yeah, that's a bit better, isn't it? Okay, I don't know how long this will last, so I'm going to ask you one. I'm going to have to wrap it up. You're funny. You're so funny. I'm going to ask you one last question, which is basically where can everyone find you online? Because I don't think I can risk asking you anything else, because she's going to scream over it. So where can everybody find you online, and also where can everyone find Creative for Good online? I'll link to everything in the show notes. But
so my blog is at not at sorry so you people can find me on my blog www.mondomulia.com. And also on social media, I'm at Mondomulia everywhere, except for Twitter, which is just at Mulia.
Oh, yes, it is, yeah.
That's because, yeah, Twitter was the first thing I started a few years before my blog. And Mulia is basically a nickname of my name. And Mondo means world, so that's the meaning of my blog. That's the world of Mulia. And also I Instagram at IG Brunch Club, and I'm also part of Creating for Good, and you can find this at Creating for Good on Instagram, and creatingforgood.co.uk is our website, and you can also sign up to our newsletter to know about our events.
Thank you very much. Hopefully we can edit this little one out.